Picture's worth a thousand words, and so we spend a lot of money on pictures, don't we? From digital cameras to camcorders to capture the photos and the experiences of our lives. Well, since God is the one who made us, He understands that pictures speak more. And so when He crafted His message in the Bible, He used lots and lots of pictures, things that we would be able to feel and relate to in vivid imagery so that His truth could come through in clear and unmistakable ways. What I want to do is I want us to look at two images of things that we experience in our Christian life. And as we look at these two images from Scripture and compare and contrast them, I believe that what will emerge this morning is a better understanding of how to put into practice your Christian faith on a day-to-day basis. And so I want you to open your Bibles to two different passages, and we're going to compare and look at these together. The first passage is in Mark chapter 9, the transfiguration of Jesus Christ. Turn over to Mark chapter 9. When you get to Mark chapter 9, stick your finger there. And then flip over to Hebrews chapter 12. Now, for those of you who have been with us for the last several weeks, we've been doing the 40 days of purpose. And we've taken a look at the five purposes that God has placed before us that we ought to be living out in our lives. And I'm sure that many of you now are beginning to experience a little bit of a letdown. For 5 weeks, I was focused every day in the Word, reading, thinking, praying, studying the purpose of my life. And now that's over, and life seems to be a lot more like it used to be than what I would hoped it would be. Why is that? We're going to get some insight on that this morning. In Mark chapter 9, we see an experience that Jesus has with three of His disciples. Look at verse 2. After 6 days, Jesus took Peter, James, and John with Him and led them up a high mountain. Okay, underline that locale, because this is going to be picturesque for us. He led them up on a high mountain where they were all alone. There He was transfigured before them. His clothes became dazzling white, whiter than anyone in the world could bleach them. And there appeared before them Elijah and Moses, who were talking with Jesus. Peter said to Jesus, "Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us put up three shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He did not know what to say. They were so frightened. Then a cloud disappeared and appeared and enveloped them, and a voice came from the cloud, "This is My Son, whom I love. Listen to Him." Suddenly they looked around. They no longer saw anyone with them except Jesus. And they were coming down the mountain. Jesus gave them orders not to tell anyone what they had seen until the Son of Man had risen from the dead. They kept the matter to themselves, discussing what rising from the dead meant. And then over in verse 14, when they came to the other disciples, they saw a large crowd around them and the teachers of the law arguing with them. Now, this is what we would call a mountaintop experience. Jesus took them up onto the mountain and they saw things differently. After the mountaintop experiences was over, they came down from the mountain, and when they hit the bottom, the teachers of the law are arguing with the disciples, and if you went on in the passage, you would find out that the disciples were unable to cast out a demon, and everything was going wrong. Up on the mountain, everything's going great. Down where people live, everything is not going great. Flip over to Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12. Second picture. Verse 1 says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us." Now, what kind of race is this? Should have a clue, because sprinters don't have to persevere. They finish, and it's over. The people who have to persevere are those who run long distances. the word run here, or the word race here, is literally the word agon, from which we get our word agony. In other words, the race itself is a marathon. It hurts. It's hard. Now, that's the picture of normal living. It's not a mountaintop. It's a marathon. He goes on to say, in verse 2, let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Biggest issue in the race of life is discouragement and fatigue. Not that we all want to quit living, but discouragement and fatigue from the most important, most valuable things. Now let's look at the contrast of these two images. Let's begin with a look from the mountaintop. With a look from the mountaintop. What are some of the common characteristics of the mountaintop that are different than normal life? Those high spiritual experiences when God seems to be really speaking to us and we're really moving forward in our faith, and then that in contrast to the routine day-to-day experiences of life. Well, from the mountaintop, there's always a different perspective than there is from the marathon. From the mountaintop, there's always a different perspective, and that perspective is the grand versus the ground. Think about it. When you get on a mountaintop, you can see for miles and miles and miles. And all of a sudden, the terrain of life becomes very clear. When Peter and James and John stood with Jesus Christ on the mountaintop and saw him transfigured, taking on the glory of who he was, they had a different understanding. It became clear that Jesus was the Son of God. He was all-powerful. That was so crystal clear. Now, on a day-to-day basis, in the normal eating, drinking, sleeping, sweating, and living of life, that may have been veiled at times, but there was no mistaking who Jesus was on top of that mountain. It was absolutely crystal clear. You got perspective. You can see the grand scheme of things. Over the past 40 days, when we've been in this mountaintop experience, it's been really clear what the purpose of life is. Been very clear why God put us here. It's unmistakable. It's so clear. But it's easy on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday morning to start looking at the ground. Now, for those of you who've run long distance, if you're in pretty good shape, you can typically see 2 or 3 blocks ahead. If you're not, what are you normally doing? You're running, looking at what the next step is going to be. How can I get my foot to take this next step? We lose perspective in the day-to-day running of the race. That's one of the dangers of living normal life, to lose perspective. Second, when it comes to time, the mountaintop experience is different than the day-to-day race. When it comes to time, on top of the mountain, time seems to stand still, frozen, versus in the marathon, where it's frantic. When you get to the top of the mountain, everything seems to stop. You notice what Peter says, hey, let's build some shelters and just hang out up here. Everything seems to stand still. I remember one time I was on an elk hunt in Colorado, and we were climbing these mountains, and I got to about 9,000 feet, came to the very top of this particular mountain. And the ground was covered with snow. It was very cold out there in the 20s. There was some breeze blowing. But I got up there, and I just stood at the top of the mountain. And when I got to the very edge, I could see for miles and miles in all directions. And I just stopped. And I don't know how long I was there. Time seemed to stand still. I just stood there and stood there, taking in the beauty. Finally, I realized I couldn't feel my toes anymore. I'd been there so long, I was freezing. But I didn't want to leave because it was just so unbelievable. Once we get in the midst of a spiritual high, we don't want to leave because we know what happens when you come back down. And when they come back down from the mountain, there's all kinds of things to distract you. All kinds of things going on. We have a different view of time and we become busy. It's hard to stay focused. It's hard to slow down. The third difference from the mountaintop experience to the marathon is the difference in the quality of the air. On top of the mountains, the air is refreshing, it's crisp, it's clean. When you get down in the marathon, the air is stale, it's polluted, filled with humidity. The mountaintop experience is exhilarating. It has an emotional feel to it. Peter, James, and John in the presence of Jesus Christ were pumped up. In fact, their emotions were running so wild, the text says they didn't even know what to say. They were so overwhelmed. But you get back down into the race, and you start to run the race, and you lose that exhilaration. Things become difficult. It becomes hard to breathe. What was fresh on the mountain becomes a burden in the marathon. We've been on a mountaintop experience, but we live in the marathon. So how do we do that? Let me share with you three truths this morning from Hebrews chapter 12 to give you confidence and hope that even in the midst of the marathon, the things that you learned on the mountaintop, that you took away from the mountaintop, can be incorporated into your life in a successful way. Three principles or three truths about life in the marathon from Hebrews chapter 12. The first principle or the first truth is this, and this is very important. The truth is that I can run this race called the Christian life. I can run this race called the Christian life. I know what some of you are feeling. Some of you are feeling, you know, as soon as I finished chapter 40 of the book, all of a sudden, having a daily quiet time became just like it was before, really hard. Just as difficult as it was prior to starting this. You know, after experiencing the sixth gathering of our little group where we got together to talk, and then we went a week, and I started thinking, you know, I'm going to have to leave the couch and go to small group again tonight. Oh, I'm not sure I have the energy to do that tonight. And it felt like it's just the same as it was before, and you wonder, am I wired wrong? Are there certain people that are wired for worship, they're wired for fellowship, you know, they're wired to grow in their faith, they just kind of have this wiring to do ministry, they're wired to share their faith, and I'm not. I just don't have that stuff. Well, if that's what you think, look carefully at what the writer of Hebrews says in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1. He says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with it, perseverance, the race marked out for us. Now, there's two key understanding, key ideas in this passage that tells us we can run this race. The first one is the witnesses. He says, since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. Now, some have interpreted this as spectators. There are people that are watching us run, and they're clapping and cheering for us. And maybe they're booing when we get off track, when we don't do what we're supposed to do. They're kind of looking down their nose at us. That's not what this passage is referring to. The witnesses are people who are testifying to us that they have successfully run the race, they've completed it, they've made it, and they're witnesses that it can be done. Now, who are the witnesses? The witnesses are the people in chapter 11. Let's look at a couple of them in chapter 11, in verse 7. We find Noah. It says, by faith Noah, when warned about things not yet seen, in holy fear built an ark to save his family. By his faith, he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness that comes by faith. Now, God tells Noah to build a boat big enough to hold two of every of the various species of animals. It's going to take him 120 years to build this boat. He's building it in dry dock on the land, and it has never rained before up to this point. That is a little bit far-fetched. But he did it. And he succeeded in doing it. Let's take another example. We'll look down a little bit further. Let's look at Abraham. Starting in verse 8, it says, by faith Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. How many of you guys have had a job offer and moved your family to an undisclosed location? He went. God said, I'm going to give you a land. And Abraham started out, had no idea what it was going to look like, where it was at, what the conditions of it were going to be. But he went there and he founded a nation. If Abraham can do it, can you do it too? Let's take another example. How about Moses? Let's look at verse 24. It says, by faith Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be mistreated along with the people of God rather than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a short time. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt, because he was looking ahead to his reward. By faith he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who was invisible. Moses, at age 80, comes back and leads his people out of Pharaoh's court. If Moses could do it, could you do it? Now, I want us to play a little game this morning. Remember last week I challenged everybody to think about the one thing that God spoke to you about during the 40 days that he wants you to do or maybe to stop doing. Remember I asked you at the end of the service, what is the one thing? And then I challenge you with it. Are you going to go do it? Now, over the course of this week, I'm sure Satan has given you a lot of ideas about why that's not going to work for you. Why it just can't work. I mean, your life just won't allow it to work. So here's a little game I want you to play. It's the fill-in-the-blank game, and it is if God could for so-and-so, then could he for me? So you get ready to personalize it. I'll walk you through it. Here's how you play. If God could give Noah the patience to build an ark, then God can give me the patience to what? Is it patience you need? Try again. If God could give Samson the strength to defeat the Philistine army, then he can give me the strength to... What's the issue in your life? Is your schedule? Is that the issue? Can he give you the strength to defeat your PDA? Try another one. If God could give Abraham the faith to uproot his family for a place he had never been, then he can give me the faith to... What is it? Reconcile a relationship? Think about the issue in your life that's the holdback or the challenge for you. And then play this little game. If God could for biblical character, one of these witnesses, then God can for me. You see, that's the purpose of the witnesses. There have been multitudes of people who have harder situations than you will ever face, who've been successful at running the race. If they can do it, so can you. Second thing in this first verse that we need to notice is that it tells us that this race that we've been asked to run with perseverance is a race that has been marked out for us. Look at what it says in verse 1. This is the race that has been marked out for us. Before every marathon is run, someone goes out there and lays out the course to make sure the runners run on the right course. Who is the one who marked out the race of your Christian life? Is that not God Himself? Did God not lay out for you the path that He would want you to follow? That was one of the key principles that we saw in our study. that God is in charge and He's got a plan for your life. And sometimes that plan takes you up hills that are so steep, you don't think you could ever climb that high. And sometimes it runs you down into the deepest valleys where you don't think you can see the light in front of you to take the next step. But you know who put the race in front of you? God is the one who marked it out for you. And He's the one who can get you through it. If God laid out the course of your life, then God can certainly take you through it. I love what Paul says in Romans chapter 8, verse 32. He says, He, that's God, who did not spare even His own Son, but delivered Him up for us all, how will He not also, along with Him, freely give us all things? I mean, if God would give Jesus Christ as a sacrifice for our sin, if He would sacrifice His own Son on our behalf, is He not going to also provide what you need to live your Christian experience through whatever difficulty you're finding on the path? You can run this race. You can, by the power of God, excel in living a purposeful Christian life. Second truth in this passage is that I can run better, lighter. I can run better, lighter. I can run the race carrying some extra baggage, but I can run better, lighter. You ever look at advertisement for running shoes? It's funny to see some of those comparison charts between the different kind of shoes because they weigh the running shoes in ounces. And they compare them. You know, this one's better than this one because it weighs 3/4 of an ounce less. That doesn't mean anything to most of us. But to people who run long distance competitively, an ounce or two here, an ounce or two there makes a lot of difference. Most of us carry a significant amount of excess baggage, unnecessary things in our life that really weigh us down from living out the Christian experience. And notice in verse 1, he challenges us with that. He says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked off for us. Two things that happen. Along the course of our life, we have a tendency to pick up things that hinder. Now, that phrase, the things that hinder us that we ought to lay aside, these are not necessarily evil or sinful things. They're just accumulated weight from the world that can weigh us down to the point where we can't run effectively. By running, we're talking about accomplishing our purposes. So let's think about some of those things. Overcommitment can hinder you from living out your Christian experience. Setting unnecessary goals that might achieve a lot, but are they really helpful in moving you forward in your faith? How about all the extra junk that we buy and then have to maintain? At least until we sell it in a garage sale and then buy some more. We as Americans oftentimes don't realize that our material prosperity oftentimes is part of the reason why we're so miserable. Because we've got so much and we have so many opportunities that we're just never satisfied. Sometimes just divesting of stuff. I mean, if you got the boat, then you feel guilty about not using it. Right? And we go down the list of a myriad of things that we tend to put into our lives, clutter our lives with, and once we do that, then we are hindered from being able to accomplish the things that God has placed before us and has us doing. Some of us need to lay aside the demands that people have placed on us. Because some of those demands are not godly, they're not holy, and they're not valuable. And we're trying to please a whole bunch of people that we can't do that and live the life God has given us. Some of us are just hindered by incredible amounts of debt. That even when we're not thinking about it, there's something in the back of our mind all the time that's just putting an edge in there. How am I going to take care of this? You see, you begin over the course of your life to pick up extra baggage, things that hinder, And then you try to make a good running start to put purpose into your life, to organize your schedule around the things that are really a priority to God, and you find there's no room. And you say, well, I don't know what to do now. What gives? Well, something's got to give. Everything in life is not worth doing. Every good thing in life is not worth doing. Every great experience in life is not worth having when it comes to the sum total of your life. I can run better, lighter. Secondly, he talks about the sin that so easily entangles us. The thought here is that sin, like excess clothing to a runner, or like rope to a runner, that makes it difficult to take strides or sometimes even trips us up. That sin in our life can also be a major hindrance. You see, whenever you load yourself down in the course of a race, it takes significant amount of your energy just to carry the weight. Whenever you load yourself down with sin in your Christian life, you're blocking the very power of God that gives you the energy and the stamina and the endurance to keep going. Over the past 40 days, did God identify a specific sin in your life that you need to set aside, you need to let go of? Is it an addiction? An attitude? Lust? Greed? Are you carrying a grudge? All of those things will slow you down. A clear conscience is a powerful, powerful commodity in running with endurance. A clear path to the source of power, God Himself, is critical to survive and to excel in running the race God put before us. And finally, the third principle here is I can run to finish by fixating on Jesus. If I really want to finish this life, I can run to finish by fixating on Jesus Christ. Notice in verse 2, he tells us that Jesus is our source and our strength for running. In verse 2, he says, let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning his shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Notice verse 3, he says, consider him. So we've got two challenges in verse 2 and verse 3. The first one is to fixate on Jesus, to put our focus on him and make him the focus of our lives. Secondly, to consider Jesus, to be pondering Jesus, to be thinking about Jesus. So success in running the race always comes back to our understanding, our thinking about, our fixating on Jesus Christ. Why do we do that? He's a source of our life and our strength. In verse 2, he says, let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. Jesus Christ is the one who has authored the race. Jesus Christ is the one who's finished the race. Perfecter means to finish, to complete, to bring it to maturity, to completion. He's the one who brings the race to completion. Jesus brought us into the race through his death on the cross. Jesus will take us to the end of the race by perfecting us in him. That's where we find it, in Jesus Christ. Secondly, Jesus is also our example. Jesus is also our example. Look at what he says. This is so good. He says, let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. Now, here's the example of Jesus, who, for the joy set before him, endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. What an example. Jesus Christ had a mountaintop perspective that he maintained all the way through his race. What do you see on the mountaintop? He saw the big picture. What's the big picture? The joy set before him. See, Jesus Christ saw the day when he would be standing in the presence of his Father in heaven and hearing well done from his Father. Jesus Christ saw the day when there would be men and women from every tribe, tongue, nation, language on the face of the planet who would be standing in the presence of the Father who created them, worshiping God in heaven. and experiencing eternal bliss in the kingdom that he was establishing. Jesus saw all of that. So he had a mountaintop perspective. Now, what did he have to do in the marathon? He had to experience hostility. He had to experience pain. He had to go through the cross, the rejection of it. He had to experience the attacks of Satan. You know what? The writer of the Hebrews says that Jesus Christ is our great high priest because he was tested and tempted in every way that we are. And yet without sin. Jesus Christ has been down your path. But it was the mountaintop perspective, seeing the joy in the presence of God that gave him the ability to endure. And not only did Jesus endure, I really love this phrase, one of my favorite phrases in the Bible. Jesus Christ not only endured, but he scorned the shame. He scorned the shame. What does it mean to scorn the shame? Well, shame basically is the thing everybody wants to avoid. The shame of the cross, the pain of the cross, the humiliation that the Son of God is condemned, accused and condemned as a common insurgent, someone who is a blasphemer against God. All the titles that were ascribed to Jesus are the very things that nobody wants to ever have that said about themselves. Going through what Jesus did, like that's the last thing on earth. That is so shameful. You know what Jesus did? Jesus mocked the mocking. And he turned the cross and his experience on the cross, rather than a thing of shame, he turned it into a thing of awe and admiration. Up till Jesus' moment on the cross, everybody assumed that a person who was crucified on a cross, that was the most despicable, lowest thing that could ever happen to a person. Nailed naked and dying for a crime in front of a group of people to be mocked and laughed at. That was considered shameful, but you know what? Jesus Christ turned the tables on it and turned the cross into something that probably 20% of you right now are wearing around your neck. He scorned the shame. He turned the tables as a badge of honor. You see, Jesus Christ entered into the trials and suffering that came his way, and he made them glorious because of the way he lived, the way he looked at those, the way he handled it, all with a view to the end in mind. Now, here's the key. When you think about Jesus, when you contemplate him, when you fixate on him, you know what you're going to have? You're going to have mountaintop perspective in the marathon. Because you're going to be thinking of the day that when you're going to stand in the presence of Jesus Christ and you're going to hear him say, well done. You did a great job. You took the difficulties of life and you kept your purpose and focus and you turned the hardships of life into acts of heroism. Just like I did. And the people that you brought to faith are going to be there in the presence of Jesus Christ as you accomplish your mission in the world to share the good news with your friends and neighbors. The people you brought to faith, they're going to be there. And you're going to say, man, this is so awesome. I got to do this. I got to be part of this. I'm so glad I ran the race well. And when you think about the race from that perspective, from that mountaintop perspective, of the joy set before you, then rather than looking at the day-to-day trials, the hardships of life, and losing heart, growing weary, giving up, you'll find yourself persevering. You'll find yourself enthusiastic. You'll get back that joy because you're looking at Jesus Christ and the goal in him. So I bring us back to our challenge. Are you going to incorporate the truth from the mountaintop into the day-to-day experience of your life? What is that one thing? What is that one thing? You say, well, Tim, I took care of that on Monday. What is that one plus one thing? What is it that God is saying to you that you need to do? You can do it. Fix your eyes on Jesus Christ. Look forward to the joy. Live the marathon from a mountaintop perspective. And God will bring you through it. Let's bow our heads for prayer. Father in heaven, so awesome to know that what you're calling us to, the race that you've placed before us, is not an impossible task. Father, though it's difficult and hard, just like the cross was for your Son, Jesus Christ, you are going to get us there. Father, I pray that there would not be a man, woman, or child in this room that would give in to their discouragement or settle for less than the best run that they could possibly have in the power of your Spirit. We pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.